Hello and welcome to another episode of the Pod Well Travelled. I'm Penny Thomas and in the studio with me is fashion writer and stylist Megan French. How are you, Megan?
I'm good. I'm happy to be back.
Yeah, nice. So I've just returned from doing quite a fun rail experience across Australia from Adelaide up to Darwin. The journey is called the Garn and it's quite an iconic rail route. But we thought for today, Megan will just sort of chat with me about the experience and hopefully we can unpack some of the things that you might also want to know about travelling by train across Australia.
Yeah, so I guess to kick it off, let's just cover what is the Garn, because I know I only recently found out about this and some of our international listeners might be in the same boat. So what is it and what's it named after?
Yeah, so the Garn is quite a legendary sort of rail journey in Australia. It's been operating for 95 years, I think, this year, which is pretty impressive. It is based on a route where old Afghan cameleers over a century ago would travel from a place called Stuart, which is now Alice Springs, down to Adelaide and back. But now there is this epic train ride that's been operating for a really long time. And it's probably one of the most renowned rail journeys you can do in Australia, if not the world. It's sort of one of those bucket list trips. So I had heard from a lot of people about how amazing it was. It's something that a lot of my family friends have done and told me about, but I'd never experienced it for myself, but it always had been in the background for me. I did want to try it, and so I'm really glad I got the experience or the opportunity to give it a go. So the train travels from Adelaide up to Darwin and it also returns, but the route that I did was just the Adelaide up to Darwin part. Along the way, we stopped at a place called Marla in South Australia. We also stopped at Alice Springs and we stopped at Katherine. When we stopped there, there was all these different off-train experiences that we were allowed to do. You do stay overnight on the train and it is a really fancy experience and quite bougie.
Yeah, it sounds amazing with such a rich history. So what were your first impressions upon boarding the train? Because I know the Garn offers various cabin classes, is that correct?
Yeah. So my first impressions of the train was when I got to the terminal in Adelaide, which is actually very close to the city centre, which is very handy if you are boarding the Garn. It's a really nice environment. I was there quite early before the train, before we left. And everyone was sort of mulling around. All the employees were getting there. It was a Sunday morning and they decked out in R.M. Williams outfits and they've got these Akubra hats on. And the atmosphere was just nice and exciting. And then more and more travellers arrive to the terminal and champagne gets served. There's tea and coffee. There's also little muffins. It was a really nice environment to start the trip. And then we have a little toast before we all board the train. And the train itself is just spectacular. It sort of feels a bit old worldy, but then it's got all these new amenities as well. So it's sort of what you want in a rail experience. There's a bunch of different cabin classes. And I was actually staying in one of the relatively new carriages, which is the Gold Premium class. So for those who don't know, with the Garn, there's sort of your regular standard Gold class. Then you've got Gold Premium, which is where I was, which is essentially like a premium economy. And then you've also got the Platinum. And the Platinum is like your first class. So I was in a really nice midway point that is really fancy and it comes with all the bells and the whistles. And also you get a sort of elevated food and wine offering in that as opposed to the regular Gold. I had my own private bathroom. The cabin was fairly spacious for a train and I had plenty of space to lie down, and then my day bed would turn into a nighttime bed. So there is the Gold Standard, which is the sort of standard offering that you get. I don't think that they have their own private bathrooms, and they also have their own sort of restaurant and meal and dining sort of area that they use. The Gold Premium has its own dining room with a little bit of an elevated menu and wine list, and then there's the Platinum. So they get full beds that lie down. So it's a little bit more of a comfortable experience than where I was in the Gold Premium. But I would still say that it was the perfect middle ground, which is where I was. And then the people in Platinum also get a few additional add-ons, which I'll go through later on when I play a recording that I actually did with a team member from the Garn whilst I was on the train.
And so it sounds quite luxe across all the cabin.
Yes, it will always be a luxurious experience on the Garn, and that's what it's really known for. So the company behind the Garn is Journey Beyond, and a lot of what they do is just known for, especially in Australia, for offering a premium service with all the tours and experiences that they offer. So you can be guaranteed with that, which is great.
Oh, beautiful. And if anyone's wondering visually what the cabin, what Penny's cabin looked like, we'll be posting a video on our social media. So keep an eye out for that.
Yeah.
But let's go into costing. So how much is it? Is it an expensive trip?
Yeah, I mean, it isn't a cheap trip, but it is doable, I think. So it does vary. The one that I was in, which is what I'll give you the price for, that starts from around $3,495. The trip itself goes from, like I said before, Adelaide up to Darwin, and it's 2 nights, 3 days. So everything's included with that. And think about the travel time that you're also doing and where you're visiting. I think that also really plays into the price factor. So yeah, from there, it does go up. It is more expensive for the platinum carriages. And then also it's a little bit cheaper if you're just in the standard gold.
Yeah. And what were the amenities like?
Really nice. Like I was really happy with my cabin. We were the second group to try out these cabins. They'd only recently been renovated, which was fantastic. The decor was beautiful. The linen was wonderful. The bathroom was, it's quite compact, the bathroom in the gold premium section, but it's still very easy to get around and use. And it's still spacious enough. Do you know what? I was actually really happy with the layout of it all. I do know that in the platinum section, the bathroom is double the size of the bathroom that you get in the gold premium. So that's just worth noting.
Yeah, it's so luxury to have the privilege of having your own bathroom.
And they're always fully booked as well. They really do book out. So you should, if you are thinking about doing the Garn, definitely jump onto their website. They have a sale on at the moment because they're in their 95th year of doing these outback adventures. So you might be able to snap up a bit of a deal.
Is there a popular season, like a peak season for this kind of trip, or is it all year round?
So the Garn only operates between April and October every year, and that's because you can get a lot of rain outside of those periods. So they do have to factor the elements in, and it also can be quite hot when you're travelling through the outback during summer. So
yes, of course.
Something else to keep in mind. I was there in April this year, 2024, and we didn't have any rain actually during our journey, but a couple of weeks beforehand they did, and they did have to come up with different ways to get around some places where there was a bit of flooding. Unfortunately, during my trip on the Garn, there was a couple of off-train experiences, like seeing the Cutter Cutter Caves, that I wasn't able to do because they were underwater. So there had been a lot of rain in the weeks leading up to my trip, but that also meant that the scenery was really beautiful and really green. And at Stanley Chasm, there's a beautiful gorge there, and when I spoke to one of the guides there, they hadn't seen rain there or water in the gorge for a long time. So that was quite special to see it there and know that that's unusual as well. But that's just the outback, and you have to expect that there are going to be some crazy conditions sometimes that you can't always predict.
And some unique experiences. So as a whole, what were the highlights of your journey on the Garn? Like, did anything take you by surprise?
Yeah, so I really liked, I guess, the whole luxuriousness of it all. That is what sort of I was really impressed by. I also like just traveling by train. The landscapes changed so quickly from sort of a regular cityscape in Adelaide to farming land on the Adelaide Plains. And then as you're going through the outback, obviously you can imagine the sort of yellowy golden tones and sort of orange rusty colours that then come to light. But then you've got these sort of emerald greens and olive colours from the trees and the greenery. And it was like I was looking at, you know, those old artworks that people used to produce or still do, but of the Australian outback, and that really sort of Australiana feel to it. It was like that every single time I looked out the window in my cabin, which was really beautiful.
Beautiful. It's like you're looking out to a painting, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And so how did you pass the time during the long stretches between your stops? Did you get cabin fever?
Didn't get cabin fever, but I think the best thing, and this sort of ties into the highlights as well, is that you do get a lot of off-train experiences when you are traveling on the Garn. So you start off in Adelaide, you're sort of excited when you're there, you kind of get your stuff unpacked and learn your sort of way around where you are and where the bar is and where the restaurant is as well. And then I just sort of settled in, opened up the blinds, made sure I was taking a lot of the journey in, especially those first few hours. I thought I could get motion sickness because I am someone that's prone to that. And luckily I didn't. I did take some tablets just in case. And then, you can read books. I did some work. There is not a lot of reception when you get out into some of the really rural areas. My phone operator did provide a lot of coverage throughout the journey, but there were some people with different phone providers that didn't. So it really just sort of depended where you were, but you probably get reception about once a day. There isn't Wi-Fi on the train yet, but they are starting to roll that out, I believe, this year or next. But it's not a huge issue. There aren't TVs or anything like that. Well, not in the gold premium cabins, but the window really is the entertainment.
Almost a good way to switch off though.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what train journeys are really about, is you get to slow down and really enjoy the journey and see where you're traveling in such a different way, which I think a lot of people are realizing that that is just something that's super nice as well. So there is an appetite for it. I was going to say, back to the highlights that we were sort of, you asked me about before, when we stopped in Mala on the first morning. So we'd stayed overnight on the train. We stopped in Mala and we had to wake up quite early. It was around 5:45 that I put my alarm on, and I also requested that one of the crew come and knock on my door, because there was an experience booked for us where we could get off the train, watch the sunrise over the outback town and enjoy a breakfast burger, coffee and juice and catch up with other passengers that were on the train. So that was a really nice first experience that we got to witness. Another experience I really liked was visiting Stanley Chasm in Alice Springs, or near Alice Springs, and learning from the local Indigenous people there about their culture, and skin names was something that they really unpacked with us, which I just found fascinating, and how that works within their culture and the tribes that are sort of local to them as well. And then they also just sort of showed us how they're still caring for this ancient land that's there. And that was just really insightful and a really valuable experience for someone like me. And the final thing that I really, really liked doing was going to the Katherine Gorge and seeing my first crocodile in the wild. I hadn't ever seen a crocodile in the wild before. So that was quite exciting for me. It was just a freshwater crocodile. It wasn't a big scary saltwater one, but nevertheless, it was sunbathing on a bank at the gorge, and it had its mouth sort of wide open and you could see its teeth and everything. But the reason it does that with its mouth open is because it gets too hot and it can't get enough oxygen to its brain if it
really
has its, mouth shut. So I thought that was fascinating. Obviously, I come from Western Australia, and Perth in Western Australia, where we don't have crocodiles that roaming around.
Thank goodness. How were the dining experiences on board? Did you have any standout meals?
Yeah, so the dining experiences that you get on the Ghan is one of the key things that it's also known for. So not just the train journey that you're doing, the luxury accommodation, but the food and beverage offering is exceptional. And I will include a chat that I did on the Ghan with Matt Snare, who's the general manager of food and beverage for the whole Journey Beyond group. So that's really interesting if you want to have a listen about what goes on behind the scenes as well. But I can just let you know now that as our journey started off in Adelaide, a lot of the dishes on the menus for lunch and dinner and everything were really honed into where we were. And then as we travelled further up, there was a lot more regional produce from the different areas that we're passing through. So I really liked how they shape the whole menu around the trip. And you can sort of start off with these, you know, amazing flavours that you might get from South Australia. But then as you go further up to the tropics, it gets a bit more fragrant and tropical and lighter. So it was interesting to pick that up throughout the journey as well. And yeah, everything's included when you purchase your ticket or book to go on the Ghan. So you get breakfast, lunch and dinner, and yeah, an excellent wine list. I particularly liked that they had a bottle of Chardonnay that was from Vass Felix in Western Australia, which is one of my favourites. So that was great. But then they also had some brilliant wines from Adelaide Hills and South Australia, and even from Victoria as well. So that was great.
Were they using native ingredients in the dishes?
Yeah, definitely. So they'll source as much regional produce as they can. And that really just heightens the dishes. And also it's all about Australian cuisine then. Like obviously there's some influence, especially as you go towards the tropics, that you might get a Southeast Asian sort of flavour through. But that's just because that region is almost close to that where that is. So it makes a lot of sense. You can see how the menu is mapped out. And Matt does an incredible job at planning for that, and the work that has to go on to feed everyone is a lot of work, it's a lot of logistics, and they do an incredible job because the standard is really, it's up there. And that's what you sort of want when you are paying for an experience like this that promises to deliver.
And what was the day-to-day like on the train? What was the atmosphere like?
Yeah, so I found that the atmosphere was great. Everyone's excited to be on the train journey, to be honest. It's a real bucket list trip for a lot of people. But an average day for me, you'd sort of wake up, have breakfast, coffee, go back into your cabin, and then you'd probably arrive at your next destination. So that might be Alice Springs, Catherine, whatever. And then you sort of, so you get prepared for what you're doing, get all your sunscreen on, where, figure out where your hat is, get your bag packed for your off-train experiences, because you can be off the train for, you know, a few hours. I think we're all off the train for about 4 hours when we're in Alice Springs, and then again in Catherine as well. So then you come back, you often have a lunch or dinner or your next meal sort of booked already on the train. So you know when you're sort of expected to be down in the dining areas or the bar areas and whatnot. But it was funny because my mum actually messaged me, and I got the text message whilst I was on the train, and she was asking me how the journey was because she's really interested in doing it. And she asked me, are you lonely at all, especially if you're traveling alone?
Yeah.
And I think that she herself, I mean, we lost my father a few years ago, so she's obviously trying to think, will I be alone if she does the journey on her own? And I would have to say no, because what happens is that when you go in to have your meals, you are sat with another group of people, so you will always be surrounded. Every table has enough room for four people, essentially. So you always get to meet and engage with the other guests on the train, and that's what makes the experience, I think, what it is. And then you also are engaging with them and hanging out with them whilst you're in doing other things like the off-train experiences. So whilst you're doing a walk, or you're seeing some rock art, or, you know, you can even do a camel ride if you want, or a helicopter journey. So you will be able to engage with other passengers and guests. And I just thought I might add that helicopter journey is an added cost. That one's not included, but some people do it because you can get a really epic view of the gorges, especially around Catherine.
What was the demographic like on board? Were there a variety of ages?
Yeah. So look, to be honest, I'm in my 30s. So a lot of my mum's friends that do this type of experience, and they were the ones that told me how amazing it was. So I didn't really know what to expect when I was going in. I thought maybe I'd bring the median age down a little bit, but I didn't. I think once I got there, I realized there's lots of people that travel with families. There was even an 8-month-old baby that was in the platinum section. Their parents had booked the trip before the baby was conceived, so that was a bit of a spanner in the works. But they've got high chairs and stuff that they can make it happen for you, and that baby was just getting rocked to sleep by the train every single night. Besides that, there was also a lovely young chap that I met. He was about 18 or 19, and he came out for the dawn experience when we're in Mala, and I just asked him, like, oh, so what brings you here and everything? And he said, oh, I'm here with my grandma, but she's sleeping in for this experience because maybe she'd done it before or something. And I said, oh, so that's really cute. You're here with your grandma. And he said, yeah, like, she put the offer out to the other grandkids and I was the first one that took it. So that was something really great to see that, you know, you can do these really fun experiences and be younger or young at heart and a little bit older and still get a lot out of it. It's very accessible for a lot of people. Most of the people are couples or groups of friends, and often probably 50 and above, I would say, is the majority of passengers on board. But yeah, you still do get younger people.
Exactly. So for day trips, where did you stop? What did you get up to?
Yeah, so Mala, Alice Springs, Catherine were the three places that I stopped. And in Mala, we did the sunrise and breakfast, and that was just really picturesque and beautiful. I've got some great photos from there. And in Alice Springs, I went to the Stanley Chasm and did that experience there. And then when I was in Catherine, we did the gorge tour, so on the river cruise, which was fantastic to see. And then by the time we get to Darwin, you're sort of a little bit dusty, ready to get off the train. And then, yeah, had a brilliant night in Darwin before I came. I flew back to Perth. So from there.
And so the train does go back down to Adelaide?
So. Yeah, so the route is really flexible. And that's what I think is one of the great things about the Garn, is that you can do exactly the same as I did, go from Adelaide up to Darwin, or you can start in Adelaide where they have the big terminal. Adelaide's sort of the hub for a lot of the journey beyond rails or train journeys. So you can start there. A lot of people got off in Alice Springs and then they went off and explored places like Uluru and would spend a couple of days there doing different tours, and then they would rejoin the train as it was passing through. So there's often two Garns going at once. One's going up, one's going down. So you can rejoin the trip and pause your itinerary if you wish as well, but you'd have to plan that in advance as well. People were getting on when I was in Alice Springs that hadn't been with us beforehand. And then you can also do that in Catherine as well. And some people choose to fly back home from Alice Springs. So there was one couple that I met that were just doing the Adelaide to Alice leg, and then they were flying back to Brisbane, I believe it was.
Oh, so it's quite flexible then.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they just, I think they'd done it before. They really liked that part of the trip, and then they they didn't want to be on the train for too many nights in a row. I think they were a little bit older, so that's what suited them. But it's also worth noting, if you come from Darwin down to Adelaide, the trip does vary slightly, and you do, it is, instead of being two nights, it's three nights. So you get 4 days on the train altogether.
Bit of a longer trip then, yeah.
Yeah, there's two extra stops that are included in that. So you go to Manguri and you go to Coober Pedy, which would be fantastic to see, and that would definitely be something that I would look at doing if I was going to do the Ghan again.
And so how would you compare the Ghan to other modes of transportation that you've used for long distance travel?
It's just a slow way to travel that's convenient as well. You don't have to worry when you're on board a train. So it's a nice way to see a different part of the world, but not feel like you're rushing or anything like that. And it's luxurious. And like I said, I think there's something that's old worldly about being on a train. So you feel like you've sort of gone back in time sometimes. And they provide that level of luxury that you would expect, especially on a train like the Ghan. It's an experience that's hard to sort of actually put into words, because you have to do it to sort of know what it feels like and why it's so special.
Yeah, and it's great to see that Australia has that offering, because I feel like so often people associate longer train, scenic long train rides with Europe and, you know, getting the train through Switzerland or England or, you know, so it's great to know that we have such an amazing offering here, that we can see a different side to Australia on an easy way of, you know, mode of transportation.
Yeah, exactly.
And so did your journey on the Ghan kind of impact your perception or understanding of Australia? Because I can imagine seeing the different side to the our Australian flora and fauna was quite spectacular.
Yeah, I mean, it just reminds you about how vast this country is and how different it can be. So going from Adelaide up into the tropics, I mean, as you can imagine, it is such a different landscape that you get to witness and experience. And I think every single time you travel and go to a different part of the world, whether that's in your home country or not, it always opens up your mind and expands your worldview. So I've always enjoyed getting to go to new places, and the outback is unlike any place really in the world, so it's worth doing.
Yeah, beautiful. And lastly, would you consider traveling on the Ghan again?
Yes, 100%. I would definitely love to do the Darwin down to Adelaide route, just because you get to go to Coober Pedy and you also get to do the Telegraph dinner, which wasn't included in the Adelaide to Darwin route. So yeah.
I love that. No hesitation.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. No, it was great. Okay. So up next, I've actually got a few recordings that I did on the Ghan. I got to speak with Matt Snare, who is the Journey Beyond General Manager for Food and Beverage. During our discussion, he tells us all about the different dining options that are available on the Ghan. And we also chat about what happens with staff and sort of what goes on behind the scenes. You will notice that at the very end of our little discussion here, a lady was walking past and she interrupted us because she had to let Matt know how delicious the lunch that day was. And I thought I'd include that because she was a former home ec teacher, as we found out afterwards. So it was quite the compliment for him. And he didn't arrange that as well, in case you were wondering.
We've got, I'll lose count a little bit, but we've had up to 54. I think we've got about 50 chefs at the moment. And that's broken down into six teams. We've got 8 restaurants. Every restaurant has 2 chefs. So this train has 2 kitchens, or 2 restaurants, premium and platinum and gold itself. So I've got 2 extra chefs to cover that extra load. The other Ghan has 3 kitchens, so it has 7 chefs on it.
Okay.
So then the Indian Pacific has 3 restaurants, so it's got 7 or 8 chefs on it, depending on the load of the guests.
Yeah.
We don't want to compromise that experience, so there. But mostly two chefs to a kitchen. And it's a fair workload, but they're working week on, week off. We do, you know, at times we have some skill shortage, so we need to reach out into other parts. So we get some chefs from Sydney. I've got a guy in Alice Springs that helps us out, so we can pull some staff in occasionally. It's a highly skilled, you know, having 50 chefs in a brigade in a small city, like, not many people have that. And it's a creative, it's a passionate person who's a chef. So it's a little bit, I don't like to use the word volatile, but it can be a little bit, passionate. So managing all those personalities, you know, asking them to bring them onto the journey to deliver these experiences that we deliver. It's they really react quite well to that. They enjoy it. Look, they're, you know, we go through a strong interview process, a big induction process with them, you know, really instilling that brand values with them, so they really truly understand it. There's a lot of passionate people front of house. The whole business, they really invested in the brands. You know, this is an iconic brand. They really love that association. So they do, you know, really pushes them up to the next level. We've got a very diverse backgrounds within the brigade. Like, we've got about 15 different cultural backgrounds within our 50 chefs, which is pretty cool. So, you know, we've got a really strong respects values within our business. So we're really working well. We respect everyone from wherever they've come from, whoever they are. So it just really works well for us. It's a fun job for a chef. Like, this, you look out your window and, you know, it's not bricks and mortar. You know, that's, and you're not working for a family business. You're working for a big organisation that's structured, and, you know, there's a lot of support. And they do well.
Oh yeah, it just shows that you enjoy themselves.
They're engaged, and these big organisations, like, it's a great cultural benefit to us to have these people engaged. So we work very hard with our staff to make sure that they're enjoying them. That's our key thing. I say to the chef, I want you to enjoy yourself. I don't want you to be too. I want you to be serious about what you're doing, your skill. But I want you to cook to your skills. You know, chefs are a unique individual. So they're not standing on their feet for 12 hours a day in a hot kitchen, being critiqued as much as they do, and tight timelines. You need to be a special person to be able to do that. So, but I want you to do that. But I want you to love your job. And we have a pretty good formula.
The salad I had today, the chicken and mango, was the nicest.
Oh, beautiful!
I did.
Really fresh. Lovely and fresh. Lots of herbs. Yeah, it's a nice one. Oh, glad you enjoyed.
Okay, isn't that just gorgeous? I really liked that she did say that and interrupted our conversation, because it was really worth it. And you might have also noticed that there is another voice that you could hear in that little snippet. That is Sam Whaley, and he is the Garn's journey manager. So up next, I'll play the conversation that we had, and he sort of joined Matt and I as we were chatting, and explains what makes the Garn so special.
Sorry, I just talked through it, Dave.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's one of the... It's not like anything else. It really isn't. And there's not been 2 years that I've ever worked here which have been the same. You don't have two trips that are the same. The guests are completely different every trip. You've got different stories to hear. The scenery is different. Like, I've not seen it this green in... It would be over 8 or 9 years. Like, it is what it is. Like, it's hard to... How do you put a word on something that... will never be the same journey? And that's why it's the bucket list. We have people who've done 100 trips, not crew, like guests, who've literally, we've got a couple of people who know most of the crew by name. They've got pictures of me from when I first started. It's good. It's like seeing a familiar face again when you get those repeat customers. And but they always say the same thing, that it's completely different. So
You'll see at the end of the journey, when everyone's just disembarking, they're hugging their staff, and you know, there's a strong respect as well. And there's young kids, and there's, you know, it's a pretty seniors market, so they're really, you know, empathising and want to share what we do.
You'll find if you speak to any of the crew, it's the same as Matt just said about the chefs. It's a special person who can do this job. People will come, and people might do a year, and they'll enjoy it. But for the people who do over a year, and you speak to them, it's a special person. Like, it's all about sharing the holiday with them. Like, Mark, been here for multiple times.
Yes, they know me. They're all part of my family and my carriage.
So yeah, it's a special type of person.
That's
who does this job. Because it's a lot of hours. Like, yesterday for a lot of the crew is over 13 hours. So they have their week off at the end of it, but to smile at the end of a 13-hour day when you're dealing with people every day can get a bit interesting. This train is pretty much capped out just under 200. The Indian Pacific is around the 250 mark. We have had longer trains. We've gone up to 300 before, but you tend to find that they are not quite as the experience of what... You're not as personable as what we are on a train set. So this is why we now have two GAMs, and that's been for about the last, what, 5-6 years now?
We've about 1,500 travelling guests across the fleet every week. So that's because, you know, the different size trains. So the Indian Pacific's a little bit longer than this one. This is the shortest one.
Yeah. And carriages constantly move out and go around and get serviced. And so we have no train is ever going to be the same, and we'll never have the same carriages. Organising guests is always interesting, and trying to give everyone their first preference, it's hard. That's why we always ask for a second and third preference, and we try and do our very best to obviously give first preferences, but sometimes it's out of our control. The easiest thing is we have a set of limits, and sometimes you can work outside the limits, like work outside the box and find a way around it. So sometimes if we've got excess time, you can have two people on a camel as such if they're under a certain weight, or you can do things like that. So you can work around the box, but you've still got that box and you've got those limitations. So occasionally, and it's not the best thing, but sometimes you just can't give a first preference as much as you try. And I pride myself quite highly on thinking outside of the box. And now because of that, there is different aspects that the company we now use, we've come across, and we've found these different ways to do stuff. And we're always evolving and always trying to find the best way to move forward, and obviously to give everyone what they're expecting or hoping. Because it is a once in a lifetime opportunity for most people. Like, we pride ourselves in giving such a wide aspect of tours that people really get to do what they want to do. It's the best things to do in Australia. That's what we try and cover. And a lot of our tours, if you read the pamphlet, we have a GAN only thing. So something you can't do if you just go and do the tour. It's like it's something that the clientele, or not the clientele, the tour companies put on just for us. I don't know, this company just does really well at finding the most random thing that you could possibly do, and we do it well. The Telegraph Station is a brilliant one on this train, but you've got Roll In A Dinner on the Indian Pacific, so not quite the same thing. We don't have the stargazers, we have live music, we have Under the Stars, and that's a ghost town. So we just find these places and we just try and give the best experience we possibly can.
Okay, well, that's all for today. As always, we will be back again next week with another episode. And in the meantime, you can keep up to date with all our stories at thewest.com.au/travel.
And if you'd like to see any visuals from Penny's trip, be sure to check out our TikTok at The Pod Well Travelled, because we'll be posting a variety of videos of her cabin, her experience, what she saw, what she got up to. So yeah, make sure to chuck us a follow there.
Until then, thanks for listening.